Good afternoon. My name is Doretha, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals Rulings Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Ms. Katie Peters to begin. Please go ahead.
Thank you for joining our call today to discuss the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals ruling on the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. Today, the court affirmed the decision of the lower court and held that the plaintiffs cannot find real support in their proposed rule in either the text of the Constitution or the Supreme Court precedent. At this time, I would like to remind participants that this call will be recorded and that by participating in the call, you consent to being recorded. On today's call, we will hear from health and legal experts from the Center for American Progress, including Neera Tanden, President of the Center for American Progress, Ezekiel Emanuel, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress, Cy Lazarus of the National Senior Citizens Law Center, and Ian Milheiser, Policy Analyst and Editor of Think Progress Justice. I will now turn the call over to Center for American Progress President Neera Tanden.
Great, and thank you so much for being on the call, everybody. I just wanted to briefly say I think this is the best day that the ACA has had in court so far. This is a tremendous victory for the law. Essentially, we have a well-known conservative jurist, Judge Silberman, writing the majority opinion and utterly rejecting the arguments made by the law's opponents. And what I think is so important and so valuable is not only is the fact that the D.C. Circuit is, you know, the most influential circuit for the Supreme Court, but the fact is that the questions that opponents have raised about the law have really been a war between different versions of conservatism in itself. There are a new group of judicial activists. I like to think of them as the Tea Party judicial activists who have been trying to use the Constitution as a means of thwarting national solutions to problems, and the ACA is the first line of defense of that. And then there are real conservative jurists who believe in the role of precedent, believe in the respect of the three branches, and believe in a respect for the executive branch's powers. And Judge Silberman is squarely in that camp. And as a person who was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by George W. Bush in 2008, I don't think anyone can question it in his conservative credentials. And he finds what supporters of the law have said all along, which is that to undo this law is to, or to end, and to try to undo the mandate is in essence is an attempt to rewrite the Constitution itself. And my colleagues will go into greater detail about that issue, but I wanted to just make clear that this that for those of us who have worked long and hard on this law, I think it's standing and its legal grounding is the strongest it's ever been after this ruling. And with that, I will turn it over to my colleague, Zeke Emanuel, who's a senior fellow, and he'll discuss why what the nature of the benefits of the law are and why this ruling is so important.
Well, as you know, the law has been in place about 18 months, and most of the advances that we've had in the law relate to insurance coverage. For example, 2.5 million children under 26 have gotten onto their parents' health plan, including 1 million who didn't have insurance before. We've had 3.8 million mammograms received because of reducing the coverage or reducing the cost barriers for preventive services. We've had Medicare premiums stabilize and go down in some cases because of the Affordable Care Act. And I think most importantly from my perspective, certainly from the perspective of long-term, people who are interested in the long-term and cost control, there is a huge amount of activity out there by hospitals, doctors, insurers, and others to redesign care delivery, to try out different things to get more efficient care to patients, to reduce hospital readmissions, to reduce infections and to coordinate care better. And I was just on a panel this morning with people from nursing schools, people from hospitals and insurers, all talking about new innovations that they've tried to reduce care. And I think there is a lot of activity going on now, right under the radar, all because of the Affordable Care Act, looking at the deadlines of 2013, 2014, 2015, when many of these provisions are going to require more efficient, more coordinated care. People are not sitting on their hands. They are definitely working to improve care for the American population, all because of the Affordable Care Act. So I now pass it on to Mr. Lazarus.
Yes, I agree with Neera. This is the best day that the Affordable Care Act has had in court. In addition to being such an iconic conservative judicial leader, Judge Silberman here has once again stated that conservatives can be adults, and he has really vaporized the legal and the moral and political case that opponents of the mandate have asserted. He stated that there's no textual basis in precedent or in the Constitution for their legal theory. He has also implicitly, by very intricately analyzing what the Constitution actually says, exploded their claim that the actual Constitution was somehow hijacked by radical liberal judges after the New Deal period, and that their restricted version of the Constitution has some basis in what the Constitution actually was at the beginning, and it's been distorted by liberal judges in the modern era. He completely vaporizes that claim. He also shows very concisely and effectively that, contrary to what opponents say, the individual mandate to carry insurance or pay a penalty is not some kind of unprecedented, horrific invasion of individual liberty. He shows that the case that it's a necessary complement to the ACA requirement that insurers offer coverage to people even if they have pre-existing conditions, and otherwise promotes universal coverage. He shows that it's necessary to do that, and that in doing so, it's no more invasive than many other regulatory requirements that have been accepted politically and legally. So this is a really very powerful opinion, and I should just note, it's interesting that Judge Silberman and Judge Kavanaugh seemed very intent on getting their opinion out rather quickly before the Supreme Court considers whether to take up the case and how and what issues to address, which the court is going to consider in its conference on Thursday for the first time. So I'll turn the session over, I think, to Ian next.
Sure thing. Thank you, Cy. I'm going to focus my remarks on with a little details about who Judge Silberman is, and then I will turn a bit to the merits of the case. So as Neera mentioned, Judge Silberman won the Presidential Medal of Freedom from George W. Bush. And that was a capstone to a career spent as one of the leading conservative thinkers on the law in the country for many, many years. Silberman was an official in the Nixon, Ford, and Reagan administrations. He's a close ally of Justice Thomas and actually was the man who encouraged Thomas to leave the practice of law and work towards becoming a judge. He reversed Oliver North's felony conviction, and he wrote the lower court decision invalidating the D.C. gun ban on Second Amendment grounds, even though the Supreme Court's precedents at the time said that that law was unconstitutional. The Supreme Court changed the law in the Heller opinion. So this is a very, very conservative judge, and even he looked at the case at the Affordable Care Act and said, there is nothing here. And I want to be clear just how deeply he cut at the plaintiff's argument. If you pull out one quote from the opinion when you write this case up, I would recommend you pull out this quote. He said the plaintiffs, quote, cannot find real support for their proposed rule in either the text of the Constitution or Supreme Court precedent. The text of the Constitution matters. That's what Judge Silberman said today, that we cannot throw out the text of the Constitution because there are a group of people who do not like this law. I'll make one final point, and that's that some of you may be experiencing deja vu right now. And the reason you may be experiencing deja vu is not so long ago, Judge Sutton, who is another conservative icon, a former Scalia clerk, a darling of the Federalist Society, someone who for many years has been talked about as a potential nominee to the Supreme Court in a Republican White House, Judge Jeffrey Sutton also rejected a challenge to the Affordable Care Act. So what we see now is the smartest, the leading lights in the conservative legal movement are saying, no, this is a bridge too far. We cannot invalidate the law. And they're doing it because, as Judge Silberman said, there is no support in the text of the Constitution for the arguments that would strike down this law. Today's opinion reaffirms the most important thing we have heard since this litigation was filed, and that's that the text of the Constitution matters in this country.
We'll now take questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask an audio question, you may do so by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question is from Jennifer Habercorn.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing the call. I have two questions, if I could. I'm wondering, you know, even though the case won't be at the Supreme Court, if you could talk about the impact this opinion could have on the justices. And also, if you have any thoughts on Kavanaugh's dissent on the Anti-Injunction Act. Now we have a few circuit court judges saying that it does apply, and if you're concerned that the Supreme Court may think the same thing.
I'll offer two thoughts on it. So one real quick, and then I'm sorry to cut you off. I'll let you get in. One is simply that Judge Silberman thinks a lot like people on the Supreme Court, like Justice Scalia. He thinks a lot like the very, very conservative members of the Supreme Court. And the fact that he would vote this way, I think, is predictive that conservatives think this way and we're likely to have 5 votes to uphold the law. The second point is that we know that conservatives have to run the table to strike this law down. They need all 5 of the conservative justices to strike this law down. And if even one of those conservatives say that the Tax Anti-Injunction Act applies, then the lawsuit goes away for a few years. So they are already facing a very heavy lift. That makes it even harder.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also I think that in addition to being predictive, and I think that Judge Sutton's opinion can be considered predictive for all the same reasons. I just think that it's inconceivable that Chief Justice Roberts, Judge Justice Alito, Justice Scalia, Justice Kennedy will take very seriously what Judge Silberman has said here, as they will what Judge Sutton said, and especially because both of them said the same kinds of things. The fact that the case itself may or may not formally be part of what the court decides to consider really is irrelevant. The important thing is they'll read the opinions and they'll be influenced by it.
I guess this is Nira. I would just say I think I maybe think of this slightly differently than Ian. I think the basic gist of this and why this is so important for the justices is that the judge basically writes an opinion from a very conservative perspective that upholds the law and provides and really finds the weaknesses in the plaintiffs' case. And I think it will be very hard for the conservative judges on the Supreme justices on the Supreme Court to ignore these arguments, and they will just basically have a very hard time upholding Supreme Court precedent and responding to Judge Silberman's decision. And so I think that this really puts a squeeze on conservative justices by articulating this case, the case for the law, from a conservative perspective so clearly.
I completely agree with that, and I think that Nira's remark in her opening remarks that there have been two kinds of conservatives here is a very important point. And what Judge Silverman and Judge Sutton are saying is we need to continue to be judicial conservatives who believe in judicial restraint, who believe in being faithful to the text of the law and the text of the Constitution, as opposed to the kind of radical libertarian conservatives who are the people who are behind this lawsuit, who basically said what we need to do is impose this radical libertarian philosophy, even though it has no basis in precedent or in the text of the Constitution.
Thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask an audio question, please press star 1. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
All right, I think we're good to close the call then. Thank you so much for joining our call this afternoon. If you have any further questions for the presenters, you can reach us at 202-741-6285, or you can email me at kpeters1@americanprogress.org. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.